The world forgetting. Oh, shoot. I messed it up. Okay. 3, 2, 1. How app. 3, 2, 1. How happy is the blameless vestal lot? The world forgetting by the world forgot. Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Each prayer accepted and each wish resigned. Today, welcome to an intimate episode of the Movie Vault.
Great. I don't like that.
This is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, directed by Michel Gondry. He's French, so I added a little enunciation there. And written by Charlie Kaufman, who I will talk about more later. Sometimes I say that, though, and we don't talk about it later, but who cares? It stars Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet.
Oh, it must be funny then, right?
It's supposed to be a rockling comedy.
But Mr. Poppers.
But it's not. It's not. It's a serious movie. Did Jim Carrey even elicit a single laugh from you?
Yes.
Because he's... Well, actually...
When he was crying on the ice and he lifted his hands up.
There was actually a couple times that I was like, okay, I can see the Jim Carrey humor here. Yeah. Like, it's being used in a dramatic sense, but it's still like... The crazy facial expression.
Exactly. It was his acting. It wasn't necessarily the story.
Yeah. It also stars Kirsten Dunst, Mark Ruffalo, Elijah Wood, and Tom Wilkinson. And the title of the film is, which I quoted, is from a 1717 poem called Elysia to Abelard by Alexander Pope.
Pope Alexander, right?
Pope Alexander, yeah. But before we get started on the review... Zach, do we have any announcements?
Yes. Ben, say our Instagram and email.
TheMovieVaultPod@gmail.com is our email. I thought I was going to say my Instagram. We said the email. TheMovieVaultPod@gmail.com is our email. Send us anything. What you think of the podcast. What you think of us as people, as individuals. If you have any questions, if you'd like to give us any life advice, I'd love to start an episode where people ask us for advice on situations in their life.
Who would ever do that?
But in order to do that, we need one of you to send us in something.
Just one lonely sixth grader out there who's a little bit confused. Yeah. We can direct you in the right path.
We'll make a section at the end of the podcast.
Just for you, little Timmy.
And so that's what that's for. And we also have @TheMovieVaultPod on Instagram.
I love when Ben says his thoughts.
No, it's @TheMovieVaultPod.
Try them both,
just in case.
We'll make an account for both. Just subscribe to both.
And we're trying to get to 200 followers, so...
Oh, really?
Marching on our way, yeah.
Ben just made that goal.
We're at 139. We'd like to get to 200 by the end of the year.
The school year?
Well, yeah, I guess, because it's...
Or, like, this... December 31st.
December 31st.
Okay. Well, there's a deadline. If we don't make it, what happens? We die.
We have to do an episode in the snow. I actually don't really want to.
In the snow. We have to do an episode in the snow shirtless.
Shirtless. Oh, man.
In the water. In the water.
Now people will not follow us on purpose because they want to see that.
Oh, wait. Why did we say that? Yeah.
That's true.
I guess I said it. And then if we do it, then... We have our shirts on.
Keep our shirts on.
So, hopefully, the male audience tries to keep our shirts on.
Right.
And the female, you know, you guys can do whatever you want, donate or not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we won't tell you what to do.
And send us money.
Yeah, send us money. Should we turn on listener support on Anchor?
No. But, okay, and then another announcement. So, we have our YouTube channel that we've had for over a year. It's been dead. It's been vacant. Tumbleweeds go through it. But we're going to upload some more things as we finally have a setup coming soon. I guess we're announcing that.
Yeah, we're getting a permanent location. Thank you, Zach.
Yes, I bought it. Ben, sorry, little butt, is lucky to have me.
I'm always the leech.
Yes. No, I'm joking. Ben works very hard. But we all... kind of wanted to, I guess just Ben and I say we all wanted to have a permanent thing so we can keep our settings the same and not have to redo it.
As of the summer, it's like every podcast episode we do in a different location.
Yes.
Which makes it difficult to keep the consistency and like how we set up and how we record and mix the audio, which some of the locations have been really cool.
I mean, like Hawaii, cool. The Himalayas.
Sri Lanka.
Yeah. You know,
very interesting.
We were invited to the Taj Mahal, but Ben had like a track meet or something.
Right. So we can go. The Dalai Lama invited us to Nepal and we can go.
Yeah, well, they went to the Nepalian McDonald's.
Thanks to UNICEF.
I wish people knew. But anyway, so we'll have a video. Ben and I just went to a movie festival, Indie Shorts, in Indianapolis, Indiana, if you couldn't guess. And we did a little review video of that. Pretty interesting. Yeah. I mean, I won't say anything because you'll just have to check it out. It won't be on the podcast. It won't be on whatever you're listening to.
I think we're going to try to do it on Instagram and on YouTube.
Sure. That works.
And so we'll get that figured out.
More work for us. Just joking. That was a joke. No,
it shouldn't be that. It shouldn't be that much extra work.
Hopefully. I'm just joking. But the point is we're going to try to get the YouTube up more just in case people prefer that. And if not, that's fine too.
Yeah. So. Ideally, we can make more clips so that we give more engaging things for people to want to listen to the episode. So that's kind of the goal with that.
Yep.
Plus, we did a cool trip, so we want you to see what we did.
Yep, yep. And that's all of our announcements. So
now we can get back to Eternal Sunshine, the Spotless Mind. Which, not to be confused with J Electronica's mixtape, Act One, Eternal Sunshine.
Oh, I was very confused, actually. Yeah, I was like, wait, the mixtape?
Yeah.
I was like, how can you watch a mixtape, man? And Ben's like, no, it's a movie. I was like, oh.
So I didn't think much about this until now, but this movie is actually extremely difficult to summarize because it's told non-linearly, in a non-linear style.
You could just say the loop.
So I'll try to say it the best I can. So we'll set up our cast of characters first, because that'll help keep us in order. So Joel and Clementine are the lovers, and at the beginning of the movie we think that they're meeting each other for the first time when Joel skips work to go to Montauk and he meets an odd, quirky girl with colorful hair named Clementine, and he's like, oh my darling Clementine, from Huckleberry Hound, if anybody's familiar with that, which I am. She is what is called the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which I'm not really sure. A film critic Nathan Rabin coined the term after observing Kirsten Dunst, who was in this movie, but it wasn't her in this movie. It was in Elizabethtown in 2005. So the term was coined after this movie came out.
I like how they letter it MPDG. It's just like a thing.
So she basically was the first Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Just nobody knew it. And then Joel is like he's straight laced. He's not wacky. He's like a really normal guy. He's like kind of artistic. Originally they wanted Nicolas Cage to play this role, interestingly enough, which I could see that working, but I like that they picked Jim Carrey. Then we got another story going on that involves Mary Svevo, who's a receptionist in the office, Stan Fink, who's a technician, Patrick Wirtz, who's also a technician, and then Dr. Howard Mirzawak, who is a neurologist who has a clinic that erases people's memories of individuals or animals.
Or animals.
Because there was a lady who was
erasing. Oh, yeah, I did forget that.
Erasing her dead dog from her memory.
What about, like, things?
Oh, yeah. It seemed like you could isolate any.
What if, like, you had cancer?
But it was, like, something.
And you wanted to forget.
It seems like they might be able to do that. I don't know to what extent this works.
You'd just rather die.
Yeah. You'd just rather die suddenly.
And not know about it.
Like, why am I sick? I don't remember. Because you still have all the symptoms. It's not erasing the symptoms.
Eventually, if it's, like, a big tumor, you would see it.
Yeah. And then you just rediscover that you have cancer. Wouldn't that suck?
Well, you wouldn't care because you're going to die. So you'd spend all your money to keep forgetting it.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I don't know that. Maybe some people would react that way.
But hold on. Sorry. This is another thing. Like, just the plausibility of it. How could they get every single thing that reminds you of it out of there?
Oh, so the way that he explained it, Howard, was that there's an emotional core. And once you get to the emotional core of the relationship or whatever, then everything erodes from there. Does it actually make sense? No, probably not. But we know nothing about, or we don't know nothing about neuroscience, but I feel like it's still, especially when it comes to these sorts of things that are like emotional.
Well, you only have two storages in your brain for memories.
We're still very in the dark ages in terms of what we know about neuroscience, wouldn't you say?
No, like it's one of the I think we know a lot, but there's still more. There's so much more to know than other places. There's so much more to
know than we know right now. But I feel like neuroscience is one of those things that people like will say things, and I never know whether they're actually like legit science things or whether they're just a theory that somebody
came up with. There are some cool legit
things. That hasn't been tested. So Zach would be better as a resource to know which things are the actual.
I only know the basics because I have to, but it's like, Ben's right though. I think you're right. I think it's like. There's so much more than that we don't know. There's
a lot of gurus out there who would say that there's all this stuff, and they're not actually knowledgeable. They're just they're just presenting an idea that could maybe be true, but also could not be true. So
true.
So they're basing it maybe on sort of one of those things. But the idea is that Clementine erased Joel from her brain, and then Joel finds out about it, and Joel decides to erase Clementine. And so most of the movie is centered around the process of Joel erasing Clementine from his brain. And they go in reverse order of memories from newest to oldest. And so what we thought was the first meeting is actually the end of the movie as well as the start of the movie. So it's circular, and there's nonlinear storytelling with in terms of seeing Joel's memories. And Joel immediately upon discovering that, because the technicians start to mess it up and they start to get in his brain and he realizes what's going on. And so his memory understands that it's erasing Clementine and they don't want to. So they keep trying to run away and hide in different
areas. I watched the movie and this still doesn't make any sense.
They try to run away into Joel's other hidden memories, including some very embarrassing ones, some of which will not be mentioned. There's also some other interesting things going on. So Elijah Wood's character, Patrick, has used Joel's memories to trick his way into a relationship with Clementine, who he fell in love with upon seeing...
Which is so dumb, because that would make her remember.
Yeah.
Which is so dumb.
Yeah, well, I think it did. I think that was the point.
I know, but he didn't want that to happen.
He literally like did the same scenes that we see Joel of what actually happened, and he recreated them. And then this completely threw Clementine for a loop, and she blew up on him. And he didn't understand what was going on, why she... But it was because he's not being authentic. Like, of course this relationship isn't going to work. Because he's a weirdo. Patrick's a weirdo in this movie. He's a complete weirdo. So he's never going to have a normal relationship with women.
Hey, maybe. We all grow.
Maybe. If he matures a lot. Interestingly enough,
He's already got rings, though.
Seth Rogen auditioned for the role of Patrick, but Elijah Wood, a.k.a. Frodo Baggins, got it. So, Frodo, you go from being Frodo to this guy.
It's pretty good. We got Frodo, we got the Hulk, we got Mr. Popper.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good movie.
I don't even know what Tom Wilkinson has done, but he reminds me of... He's not the guy from Whiplash who was the scientist in Stranger Things, but for some reason... He reminds me of that guy. Like, he could have played that
guy. He's just old. An old white guy that's in the back.
Yeah. Who's, like, on the computer, like, 11, I could get your powers back.
Or, son, you don't have to do this to yourself in Whiplash. That's all he said.
That's true. He didn't really do a whole lot.
Ben, do you like Kate Winslet?
Yeah, I liked her in this movie.
I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't.
I thought she played the role really well.
No, she did. I just didn't. I didn't like her.
Well, though. You don't like her. You wouldn't like.
No, I didn't like the actress either.
You didn't like her?
No. Okay. I don't know why. For me, it was just kind of odd. Maybe that's just me, but I did. You're right about the character. I absolutely detested the character.
Well, I think some people she's a manic pixie dream girl. So I feel like the whole idea of that is like. They're supposed to be there for this boring guy to like change his life because she adds so much excitement. But then what we realize in the movie is that actually she's just impulsive and emotionally intense and turbulent and alcoholic. And so all this excitement is actually like really like bad stuff that are habits in her life that she needs to fix. But originally he sees them as like cool things that he doesn't have because he's so boring and probably responsible. So
we have to assume.
Or at least more responsible than she is. Because we see them fight, and he's like, you probably are wondering whether I cheated on anybody. And he's like, no, I assume you cheated on me.
Aww.
And it's just like, oh, man. And he's such a, he's kind of a pushover, so you're like, you feel like he could kind of like, if there was a woman who came into his life, she could sort of like control him. But at some point, I think it's like becomes not like that anymore. But he still has all these emotional ties to her. So he's obviously like still very heartbroken when she leaves. He finally says something that is true, but she can't take. And it probably was said in a mean-spirited way. So anyway, so it's not like he was in the right.
It was just kind of awkward to just watch the whole thing throughout the movie. Just them fighting almost the entire time until the end.
Well, but when we see the start of their relationship when they weren't fighting.
Yeah, but that wasn't, that didn't feel that long.
No, it didn't.
Because they kind of got annoyed with each other pretty quick. Like 30 minutes in, they're already fighting at the supermarket, you know?
Right, and that was such an awkward fight to watch because she was like, he was like trying to get her to stop. And it was something about like, I don't think we're ready for kids. And then he's like, are you ready to be a mom? Or like something like that. And she's like, you don't think I could be a mom?
It escalated.
And then she gets like so upset. And she's like trying to up the intensity because other people are around. And he's obviously like, I could tell he's like, he would not like the office. Like he can't take second. Like, well, I'm calling this secondhand embarrassment, but this is just firsthand embarrassment. But sort of secondhand embarrassment.
You're saying the character would not like to watch The Office.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad because he's in The Office. So.
Wait, Jim Carrey?
Yeah, he's in season. He's in season 7.
He's in a season I haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Oh wow, they're gonna cast Bjork as Clementine. What the heck? But anyway, and the other plot, which was a more important plot than I remember it being, we find out that so there's this girl named Mary who works in the office. She's the receptionist. She has a thing with him. It's not very defined. Presumably they're like dating or they're like very, very flirtatious or something. They have some sort of relationship between Stan and Mary. So Mark Ruffalo and Kirsten Dunst, aka Mary Jane and Incredible Hulk. So how about that superhero crossover? And they have some very strange scenes at when they're in technician.
I mean, they're like dancing in their underwear. Yeah, is kind of weird.
It's weird. It's weird.
Like on this guy's bed where he's like
with
sleeping.
And they were like laying down with him in between them eating off of.
And the food was on his crotch.
Yeah. It's like, what are these technicians? They're not professional at all.
I thought the girl looked professional. Like she seemed professional at the beginning of the movie. Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
But then like by the end, she was like, by the end, she's like super high and then like does stupid stuff. And it's,
yeah. And then, and so eventually they have to get Howard to come over because, what's his face? Joel is trying to evade the memories. So they need him. And then eventually Howard and Mary end up together and Mary's high and she's quoting poetry and she's clearly trying to like impress him. And, you know, he's, I mean, you can tell there's something about the way that he reacts and even the way that Stan reacts even before anything happens. That's kind of like odd.
Yeah.
And then she kisses him and she's like, oh no, I shouldn't have done that. And he's like, oh, I'm married and all this stuff. And then his wife comes and then I guess he said all that stuff, but he was still kissing her, I think, after.
Yeah. They kissed again and they kept going. That's when he's like, oh, I guess I can't say no twice, huh?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like he had a first time you could forgive it because it was like he didn't really do anything.
Yeah, I was thinking he was still innocent at that point. Yeah,
and then his wife was there. But then we find out, oh, you know, she was saying, I'm just a stupid girl. I just a crush, you know. It was just a one-time thing. And then his wife drops the bomb. Dr. Mirkowitz's wife drops the bomb. You got to tell her. Howard, it's not fair if she doesn't know. And she finds out that
they have she says, you can have him because you already have. I was like, ooh, dang.
And so apparently what has happened is that Mary has had a relationship with Howard and they decided to erase it from only her memory. Not
why,
his.
Why does he get to remember? So he can keep it on the down low?
Yeah.
Well, so, I guess they didn't want other people to know.
There's a lot of things I don't like understand about this, but I think we'll cover it in one of our sections. And so this is kind of an interesting other relationship that has been broken. And maybe as more of an indictment on the technology too, as to like, I think there's sort of an undercurrent of like, if this technology was possible, would it really be ethical because of things, of ways you could abuse it like this?
No.
Yeah. And so that sort of ends with Mark Ruffalo or Stan confronting Marion, being like, I don't know, comforting her, and
well, he professes his love, and that's it. That's it for him. He's done.
And she leaves, and then the end scene is kind of weird.
Well, she sends everyone their tapes. Everyone who's been there
gets their tapes, and then Clementine and Joel have met again because she whispers. It's very subtle, but she whispers, Bateman Montauk. And so he does. I think there's like sort of a subconscious thing where he's like, I got to go to Montauk. And he does. And they meet again. And he goes to her house after they hang out. And she's running to get her toothbrush. And Elijah Wood, who we saw at the start of the movie, we're like, who's this guy? He's like, why are you at my house? Why are you here? Because he knows who he is. And he doesn't understand why he's with Clementine.
And you begin to understand why at the beginning of the movie, nobody was at the beach. But really, in reality, when the event happened, everybody was at the beach, right? That's what, when they first met, they met on the stairs by that house, right? And
yeah.
She gave him, or he took the, she yeah, took the chicken wing.
First time they met. This is the second time they met for the first time.
But wasn't there originally people there? So when we first see him, because in the first scene, they meet at the train station, right?
Yeah.
But then, or did they meet, which one is true? The one with more people is true.
The one in his memory? No, that, see that, so... So that's the first time they met before they got their memories erased. Now they're re-meeting after their memories have been erased.
So the empty beach was...
So the empty beach was actually there.
Okay. So it's two separate events. That would have been more profound, though.
They basically replay events.
Yeah.
Again, in the second half. So they're sort of a circle, but it's more like a circle and then they go back in time. And then they do the story and then they go back to... the scene. So now you really understand what's going on, and they show some of the scenes that they showed at the start again, and then we get the tape where she plays the tape in his car, and it's all him saying all this, her saying all this stuff about him, like, he's so boring, I hate him, he's a terrible person, yada yada. And because of that, she runs off, he kicks her out of his car, and she's upset. And then she decides to go back and find him, and he's found the tape, and he's listening to her talk about, or
yeah,
him talk about her.
Yep.
Yep. And then she gets upset and is like, well, how could I be with somebody who said this stuff about me? So now she gets it more. And then they meet in the hallway and they're like, why don't we just do it again? Even though we know all this stuff, let's just, it doesn't matter. We'll start over. We'll re-meet each other. Now we like all these things about each other again that we're going to hate later. Like the color-changing hair and everything. And
which was a good plot device to use to know which memories. Yeah.
And if you did, I think if I noticed correctly, there was four different colors of hair and they corresponded with the seasons.
Yeah.
And they also corresponded with like spring. She had green hair and that's when they met. Like spring's hopeful. Mm. And they probably broke up in the winter when she had blue hair. Maybe.
So then she had orange hair and they were together?
Shit.
When they were on the ice, she had blue hair, I think.
Oh, really?
Which would be winter, I think that's right.
Yeah. No, she had orange hair when they broke up, though, I thought. So I don't know whether that
Are we was. Looking too deep into it?
Yeah, we might be. I mean, there's definitely something.
The hair represents a time period, at least.
But also just represents her personality and that how impulsive and like. And I thought it worked with the character. I kind of like the changing hair colors.
Sure. Now, was that resolution good?
I don't know. We got to dive into this. So, my first question is, why do people start relationships?
Ooh.
And like, are they good reasons?
Who's people?
And these are people in general.
Ooh, and in general. I got to make a blanket statement for people. Okay. If I had to say, probably for the rush of dopamine.
Yeah, that's what I'm... Yes. Ding, 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 ding. No, well, I mean, it might be a little bit deeper than that sometimes, but there's these, like, initial attracting factors, we could call them, right, that get people together. So for, like, Joel, it was like, oh, my goodness, she has colorful hair, and she talks, and she's, like, a little irreverent, and she's kind of weird.
That's funny, because those things make less dopamine go through my reward pathways. Yeah,
it's different for everyone.
I know, but I'm just saying.
And so, and she likes how nice he is, which is like funny because the whole thing is that like nice guys finish last and, you know, mean guys.
And he did because he got hurt.
But she said, right now, I like that you're nice. So that was enough. And I think the first time it was like, you don't know what to do at these parties either. Like, they don't know how to interact with people in certain social settings. So,
but she got mad that he called her nice or something like that.
Yeah.
She's like, nice, that's all you can think about or something like that.
Yeah. It was odd.
Which is true. Like, right, Ben, you have a girlfriend. You can't just say nice. You got to say better adjectives,
yeah,
right?
You got to use better adjectives, yeah. And sometimes it's hard. You got to, yeah. And sometimes it's like, it does get back to where you say basic things and you realize like, oh, I'm not really describing how I feel. Like, I'm just using too plain of verbiage. They can get like,
you're kind.
You're kind. You're so sweet.
You're cool. You're so cool and nice and you're kind cool. And sweet and pretty. Yeah.
So then, because these relationships are started on these like factors that are sort of surface level, then why do people stay in relationships, or maybe how do they stay in relationships? Because then inevitably,
the dopamine
rush
really
get to know
ends.
It ends, and you really get to know the person and their habits and how their normal way of doing things rubs against your normal, like it conflicts with your normal way of doing things.
If I'm thinking
if
about
live together,
if I'm thinking about what people want and why the average person would stay in a relationship. If I had to say that, and everybody agrees that the average person is dumb, right? Smart people know that most people are dumb. Even dumb people admit that most people are dumb.
Dumb people become smart when they know that most people are dumb.
And when people get too smart, they become dumb. So it's like, there's kind of like an average knowing that the average person's dumb.
Because when you get dumb. Too smart, you start to think that you know everything, which makes you dumb because you don't.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you get like, then you get so academic that you're like playing shuffleboard with your friends and not realizing that, you know, there's a basketball game going on behind you. I don't know. That's just
an analogy. And you live in a bubble or whatever.
Exactly. So average person being dumb, we've established that. I think that if they were to stay in a relationship, it would be for one of three reasons. I've just thought of these. One is because they want to keep their commitment to that person, or they accidentally had kids. Now, that's the biggest mistake that you can make. Not having kids, but having kids to fix your problems. Okay, yes. Ben and I talked about this earlier.
We had a long conversation about this.
If you, I have never been in a relationship. I am not a guru, but I am a common sense major in college. And this is what I've learned is that if you have a marriage or a relationship, and if you are having problems, the best thing to do is not to double down in those situations. If you're dating, definitely don't double down, you know? If you're married, you know, you almost don't have a choice. You
just got to figure it out somehow.
Yeah, but you got to figure it out before you add a third, you know, ectoderm layer if you want an embryo, then make sure that you're not fighting with your husband or wife. So,
yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Get the first.
The second thing is for prestige. Guys, you know, at least I know, I'm a guy. I don't know what girls think.
Even girls, I think, you
maybe
can say prestige. It's
but
in
like,
a different way. Maybe
exactly. Like, I have a really, really pretty girlfriend. Imagine that, you know? And then you tell all your friends, like, I have the hottest girl in school. Like, it's such a stupid thing to say, but that's what guys do. So that's the thing in the prestige. And then money. So if I'm thinking of the average person, there are better reasons out there, but those are for the intellectuals.
Especially now when potentially being married could double your income.
True.
If you, depending on who you marry, or it could more than double your income,
or it could divide your income in half.
Of course, you could also get pushed into a higher tax bracket because you have double the income, and then you have to pay more in taxes, so you lose
but
that. But
if you don't go into a higher tax bracket and you're technically dividing your income in two, you do get like a tax break a little bit.
Yeah. So there's different ways to work around it, but yeah, there's definitely. And there's also, I feel like there's an emotional stability of being in a relationship. And I think this happens to people, especially when they're dating. They'll stay in relationships that are even ones that are like bad, like either toxic or sometimes even abusive, because it's like somehow still easier than the alternative in their head. Even if it's not actually, maybe in reality, it would be easier if they weren't in their relationship.
So you would say
in their head,
the hook
yeah,
is either love like, or something else?
Yeah, they're like dependent in some way on that person and they feel like they can't leave. They feel like they're trapped.
Or like to report it would end their life.
Yeah.
The other person's life. And you don't want to go that far, you know? You're willing to take the pain, which is so sad. Yeah. But you're right. Those are like the dark reasons.
But we all, from the outside, you're looking at a relationship like that would be like, well, it's so easy. It's so easy to see the solution. But when you're inside of that relationship and you're the person who it's happening to, then I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as... Maybe it is, but it is not in your head as cut and dry.
True.
But that's not really the relationships they're talking about.
Well, those aren't the average.
And those aren't the average. Hopefully not.
I was more thinking like younger people,
by the way. Well, I think this can happen to younger people too. And I think sometimes that you say like toxic relationships, which is a bit more trivial a lot of times in the things, but it's still like stuff that's bad and are red flags that people still say.
Maybe I was thinking even more high school.
Yeah.
Like... just the, you know, saying like, oh, I have a really cool girlfriend that I need to show all my friends, like she's an object or something.
Yeah. Or I mean, yeah, girls can do the same thing. I think they might do it in different ways though. Like, oh, look at my boyfriend, he's the star quarterback, or you know, all the achievements.
I can't wait to clip that.
Yeah.
I purposely said mine a different way. But
I gotta be careful with my first person analogy.
Ben and I, never mind. Never mind.
It's so, they can't save your relationship, but they can save you from losing money in a car crash.
Who's they?
Call Hedman Anglin Agency at 614-486-7300. That's 614-486-7300. They love to quote you on home, auto, business insurance, and they love to tell you about how great the movie Vault is.
Yeah, and they love poetry. Yep.
These are the two things that house that fell apart in this movie, they would, it's wear and tear, so it might not be covered. I still have the thing copied in from the Fight Club episode. So it talks about pride of ownership. So that house looked like it could maybe be maintained a little bit better. So that's not letting your house become dilapidated is not covered under insurance, I don't think, but fire accidents, things like that, that's covered by insurance. So. Get that figured out already.
Yeah, just do it.
Just do it. It's better for you. And you already probably have insurance, but this could be cheaper. Saving you money, making you have more money to give to the movie vault.
Do they do life insurance?
They don't do life insurance.
Well,
I have to call somebody else for that.
If they did, that's good to have before you get married.
That's true. They might be able to refer you to somebody who can get you life insurance.
But while you're there, make sure to get some other type of insurance.
Groundhog Day? Didn't that one guy sell life insurance in Groundhog?
Oh yeah, what's his face?
Ned Flanders or whatever. He's so funny.
Not Ned Flanders. Yeah.
Oh no, it's not Ned. But he's from
Simpsons.
Simpsons. Oh my goodness.
I was about to let that go, but I couldn't.
Well, yeah, this is the biggest Simpsons fan of all time.
I am. I think it was the Ned something though.
Yeah, it was Ned something. It was not Flanders though. So why do you think I said? What is so attractive about the Manic Pixie Dream Girl? Do you know, what other movies can you think of that have Manic Pixie Dream Girls? Star Wars. Oh,
don't put me on the spot. Who's that?
I'm just kidding. I just made that up.
In Star Wars?
Padme.
Oh,
Maybe I'll just look it up. I can think of one that sticks out in my head.
What?
Immediately. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It has a Manic Pixie Dream Girl in it. Okay. Literally. She's like the same as this character.
Okay.
With her hair and everything.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a whole...
The thing is, I can recognize the category.
This archetype?
Yeah.
Maybe.
But, like, it's faceless.
Yeah. So this one says, Natalie Portman and Garden State. Never seen that movie. Oh, I'm about to read this book. Clarice and Fahrenheit 451. About to read that book. Zooey Deschanel's character in 500 Days of Summer, this character, and Stuart Murdoch's musical film Gotta Help the Girl. They do not mention Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which I feel like is.
I have a question. Fun. Did Dory end up marrying Marvin?
Marlin?
Marlin?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I mean, like, after the third one?
Manic Pixie Dream Girl? Yeah.
I mean, if they got married, they got together.
They didn't get together, I don't think.
Had little fish baby. That would be. I don't think. they're different species. I don't think that they can reproduce.
Yeah, at least it's not as complicated as like the Cars universe.
Oh my goodness.
Like in a dump truck.
Like petroleum versus diesel and I don't know. I'm just thinking
You could think way too hard about the Cars universe.
Yeah, why do they have buses or taxis or
They just have taxi written on them. There's nothing else. The animals, the flies are cars. Everything's a car. Why are the flies cars? Although, why are they not sentient?
I did want to go tractor tipping though.
Well, you could. It's cow tipping.
Yeah,
Heathers, remember Heathers?
No, I know. I want to go tractor tipping.
Oh, I see.
Like that would be fun. That'd be actually
more fun. Yeah. When Frank comes, I remember. Oh, I watched that movie so much as a kid, and it was like our cousins and I. We would all gather around him when Frank came. Was like, oh my goodness, it's Frank!
Like the big thing.
Yeah,
that was kind of scary.
He was like the bull. Yeah, it's a little scary when you're younger. Yeah,
especially at night.
Yeah, but
no, I don't know. What other are there? Other Pixie Dream Girls in animation?
In animation,
I'm thinking of Pixar.
Yeah, I feel like maybe Ratatouille. No, she's definitely not.
No, it's like the opposite. Nah, she's hard laced or straight laced. Yeah, hard laced.
That's like a movie, Hard Laced. What would that be like about hard laced drugs? Like,
I was thinking shoelaces that were stiff. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know why this is reminding me of this, but have you seen that new Saudi Arabian city that they're building called The Line?
No.
It's literally goes across the whole continent.
Is it like concept photos now?
Yeah, they like announced it. I don't know who announced it, but here, I don't know if you can really see it.
The city is a line?
But it's this giant line, and it's like tall, super tall, and like you can walk everything that you need in your life, you can walk through within 5 minutes in this city. And there's just like identical all the way across the line.
What?
It's like supposed to be like urban, like, you know, imagine like the city we live in is like a circle of like sprawling city.
Yeah.
Well, instead now it's all condensed into a line.
So that way, like, everyone gets the same quality of urbanization?
I mean, I don't know. Everyone's saying it sounds like every dystopian novel that they've heard of.
I actually like it.
Which wouldn't be too surprising considering it's, yeah, it's Saudi Arabia.
Now, is it similar to The Wall? That's the real question.
So,
wait, or The Great Wall.
This is the one I'm... So this is the spine layer. Oh, see, here we go. This is the... It's like there's a lower ground, then there's a middle ground, and then there's an above ground.
Ooh, the pedestrian layer.
I wonder who's going to be in the service layer.
Definitely the...
Like
lower class.
Like if you're in the lower class, will you ever make it above?
Do they use the caste system?
I don't know in Saudi Arabia that that's an like more of an Indian thing culturally.
Probably really racist to me to ask, but I'm like
my understanding of Saudi Arabia is that they're super 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 extremely rich oil tycoons who are all princes.
Imagine being like the heir.
Yeah. Well, oh, there's a bunch of, a lot of the princes, there's more than one. They're not all like, the king obviously probably has the most, but I think a lot of the princes have a lot of money too. Because they like own the oil. And so that's what makes all the money in Saudi
Arabia. 170 kilometers.
So, and these Middle Eastern countries are so fascinating because they just spend so much money on developing stuff like Dubai.
Yeah.
All just like.
But like into concentrated areas too.
Yeah. And like, and obviously like with Dubai, from what I've understood, they like hired a lot of labor from like Bangladesh and Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And then they would like take their passports so they couldn't go back and like pay them not that well. So it's like kind of like slave labor basically.
Oh my.
I mean, basically it's slave labor. So that's how, because there has to be a catch, right? How do you just say, I'm going to build a, like without, go, like, because America didn't just develop urbanization immediately, like.
Yeah, competing companies. Like, you didn't have kings.
It took a long time for America to develop like a service industry, like a service-based economy.
Imagine the train. The train was a big thing.
Yeah.
People were scared of it. Do you know that?
I mean, and I know America's always, for the most part, been in a better position than maybe a lot of other countries were, like financially. But sure. Still, it's like, it didn't just like happen overnight. And it feels like that's what some of these Middle Eastern countries are trying to do. They're trying to like snap their fingers because they got access to all this money. and just be like, we're going to make this happen.
I mean, there has to be a Saudi prince out there that's richer than Jeff Bezos. We just don't know.
There is. I mean,
we just don't know.
Because there's no way to keep track of how much money they have.
It's like
they don't like release it.
It's like BC Egypt.
Yeah.
Is what I think of Saudi right now.
Yeah.
Just and because of
this
like.
This is all based on my very limited understanding of these, but I feel like it's not. Like some of this stuff is like not super.
No, you always hear stuff about this. You always do. So everybody's an expert. Here's the thing. Nobody, it's a joke. But imagine having weather robots in Dubai. There's these robots that try to change different temperatures of clouds. I'm still trying to afford toilet paper every week.
They're aren't they trying to do like outdoor air conditioning in Dubai?
Oh my gosh. They're geniuses. Like, yeah. I don't care. Like, I know they're crooked. Whatever, if they're crooked or not, they're living the life over there, okay? They well, might
the
be.
The rich and the middle upper middle class people are, if they even have a middle
no,
class.
No, yeah, the people in the condensed cities, like I said, those people
they literally have
know what to
that
do.
Are built out into the ocean that are like shaped like leaves, and they have like an interstate running through the middle, and then they have like little wings. It's the weirdest looking thing.
Self-driving cars. A lot of them are electric. Just pretty cool things that they got. Skyscrapers everywhere.
Yeah, they built so many skyscrapers. It was like they just looked at American cities and they were just like, what if we made these but we just did things like in American cities? I feel like people built skyscrapers, and they built like, how many do you think there are in Columbus? Like 8 or 9
big ones.
Like 8 or 9 big ones, or maybe even less than that. And we went to Indianapolis, and honestly I was like,
Like six.
Like, and they're not even the cool looking. Like, I don't think any of them are cool looking. You're like, oh, this is a Rust Belt city. Like, Columbus has that one tower. I forget what it's called, but it's like kind of older and cool.
Is the Nationwide Tower?
It's not the Nationwide one. I mean, that one maybe is probably cool, but it's the one that's more like, I don't know.
The one that looks like the bottom of Ohio?
I don't know. But at any rate, like, it's kind of more architecturally interesting than the other ones.
I don't know. I do want to take a trip to Dubai. Now, what is their economy?
What do you mean?
Like, is it just ruled by the aristocrats? Is it like plutocracy, or is it like a meritocracy?
Okay, we're going to go to the United Arab Emirates. Because I don't know that it's like a Saudi-like government.
If I had to say, I'd say it's a plutocracy, that there's an upper elite class that rules everything.
What's the word for the countries that are like they're like oil driven? They're like,
I don't know, oil driven.
Yeah, they're
like, I don't know.
They're petro states. They're like whole economy is based on one product that they can produce.
Yeah,
which is why I think they're trying to create this like tourism industry. Let's see, they're a federal constitutional monarchy.
Oh.
Made up of 7 hereditary tribal monarchy styled political systems called sheikdoms.
Oh.
And it's governed by the Federal Supreme Council, which is made up of the ruling sheikhs of Abu Dhabi, Arjum, Fujairah, Sharjah, Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah, and Al Quwain.
All I heard was Dubai. That's the only recognizable part.
Yeah. So it sounds like they're sort of like a democracy. It's like, it's not really a Republican. I mean, there are
the president and vice president are elected by the Federal Supreme Council.
So they like centralize the power of the states by, it says hereditary. So it's people born into that position.
So then you elect the president and you have a king?
So but the president's elected.
So what's the power with the king and the president?
So there's also the government's also is legislative, executive, and judicial.
Well, there's the democratic part.
So legislative is the court that is made up of the hereditary monarchs. The executive is the president, who is also commander in chief of the military, the prime minister, and the council of ministers, and he's elected by the hereditary rulers. And then there's the Supreme Court. Okay,
so that's like a weird way that is kind of similar.
Yeah, it's like a U.S. system, but it's still like the power is still in certain families.
Definitely. I feel like no matter what, the families are still ruling.
Yeah, well, because they elect the president, of course they're ruling.
No, but the council does, though.
But the council is the families.
The council is just the families.
Yeah, because it says that the how you get on the council is by being one of the seven rulers of the different areas, and they're all hereditary tribal. So that means that they're born, they have heirs, and they go.
So the families rule two of the three branches.
Yeah, I don't know how the court system gets put in place.
Okay. Well, then at that point, it's just like, do what I say.
Yeah. I mean, it's do what the seven families have to agree. I'm describing it like it's a mafia.
That's like Game of Thrones. That's maybe. Like some, like seven tribe. That's like Black Panther. Not like weird in that way. I'm saying like,
yeah,
it's like cool. But yeah. Like also like, I don't know if they're good or bad, well, so I can't say.
Like, I mean, I don't. I feel like the U.S. has this idea that like everyone's gonna like love to adopt their like idea of freedom, but the reality is that I laugh every time I say the reality is. But the reality is that different cultures are gonna be used to different like styles of ruling, right? So true. It's not just. It's gonna be very. If you were to like completely eradicate a government and install like a U.S. style president and everything, it wouldn't work for very long before there was just obviously corruption.
Like, what if I went
and it went back to more of the system that it was originally?
Like, there's people in Haiti that probably just listen to their voodoo master.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. It's like we can't
Who do you listen to?
I would say that's fine.
Who do you submit to?
Well, the elders
of your church. Yes,
yeah, of my church.
In socially, I guess that's social.
I guess the government, right?
Sure.
In some senses.
So, like, what do I do?
Socially, and then the...
I don't pay tax... Oh, I didn't finish this sentence. It's good.
I mean, I pay taxes, because I guess I make enough money, too.
Ooh. Like, ooh.
Who somehow is still funding the new studio.
I'm just joking. I pay taxes, everyone. That's my legal yeah, sentence for
the
today.
The IRS is like, ooh, what? What? Oh man, we just talked about.
Oh my gosh! For like I forgot we're talking about this. I'm not gonna lie. Ben and I sometimes talk about these.
Eternal like, Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh my gosh!
Has nothing to do with empires in the Middle East, but I mean we were kind of also already at an ending point. The last question I had regarding the movie was
spent 20 minutes talking about Saudi Arabia. But like hold on, I'm sorry, before your last question, like imagine having that much money, Ben.
It has to mess you up because some of these princes, I know they do like really weird stuff with their money because you have so much money you could do anything. I mean feasibly do anything,
but you think of the billionaires in America, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, you think of all these guys, they're trying to pursue a scientific career now. They're trying to get involved in like media and stuff like that.
It's like they're like, oh, I have all this money. Now I need to do something that like impacts the world.
Because that's what's expected in America. That's we expect billionaires to pay their dues. But in these countries, what do they do with their money?
They spend it on having fun.
Yeah, whether or not Bill Gates or Warren Buffett are actually contributing. I mean, giving money to the poor.
Line. I mean, it's not like they just...
Exactly. They're building up their own house. They're going to add a 30-second room to their house.
They get the penthouse that stretches all the way across the line. It's like, oh, and the top floor, which is just the king's palace.
Like it's above the pedestrian way, which is above the servant way, which is above the subway. Which,
and then there's a secret lower layer that nobody knows about.
Where they keep the lowest caste. Which could be 100% true. We don't know.
It's just like Brave New World style.
Yeah.
They're like, we condition them to love being the lowest caste.
Yeah. Well, there's merit to that. I'm just joking. There's not. Not at all. But that's just crazy, Ben. I think what I would do with all that money is the sinful part of me would do the exact same thing. Not that the evil things that they're doing, but would just build these crazy skyscrapers, do all that. But the part of me that actually wants to do something, I'd probably... It's hard to say, because even what you want to do sometimes won't get done.
And you realize that, like, I feel like money only matters to an extent, because people don't think about this. Like, billionaires can't do literally, at least in America, can't do literally anything they want. Because there is the government who has the power of arms.
Unless you pay them.
Who,
unless you buy the arms for them.
Theoretically, people think that, oh, how much influence do these billionaires have in running the government? Because they can influence the elections through their finances. Which is true. But like, there's still an extent that the government regulates them.
True. Bill Gates could pay for an entire campaign.
Yeah, he could. Easily. I know. It's interesting that he doesn't do that.
It's true.
So
maybe that would like polarize his brand.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is the brand of the billionaire so important nowadays?
But these guys don't have brands, Ben.
A lot of their money is tied up in stock, which is based on, which could be based on them as a human being. I mean, SpaceX is not a profitable company from what I understand.
Without Mr. Elon.
Without how much their stock is worth. So Elon Musk, it's been shown, he can say things and it influences the price of stocks.
It's crazy.
And people believe in him. So the stock, but like theoretically, you know, like he could, and he's the one who pushes the line, I feel like, the most, because he's created his brand being like,
well, he tried to buy Twitter. So like, he
tried to buy Twitter. Whereas I feel like Bill Gates is like, he's more reserved and like, which is why people
think, well, Bill Gates was involved in all these vaccine stuff like that. So he's trying to, they're active in different ways, like trying.
Yeah.
Whereas in Saudi, it's like, these guys.
And there's nobody in their country telling them that they can't do something.
I mean, people probably say, but like, they have all the power.
Yeah.
They don't have a government over the control.
They are the government.
They can do whatever they want.
The only government that is could control them any is the U.S.
government. It's like they're basically pharaoh. But then,
on the other hand, they have the oil, so the U.S. is semi-reliant, and that's why the U.S.
especially
Saudis,
now
the U.S. and Saudis actually have for how many, you know, humanitarian issues there are in Saudi Arabia. The U.S. government, from my understanding, has a pretty good relationship with the Saudis because they have to in order to fund our entire economy, which is based on oil.
True. And I mean, I'm paying $5 to drive to.
Hey, it went down to $3.99 today. So
did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
In some places,
the Saudis are easing up.
They're easing up.
They're like, we got enough. We could share a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they could.
Yeah, they could.
Please, but, Mr. King of Saudi Arabia, please lower the gas prices. It is
a limited resource, so
one day out, right? I will save your baby's life. He doesn't care.
They've got to invest in solar power. Solar power is the way to go, right?
I agree.
It's got to be.
I agree. Just, you got to integrate them into trees. Integrate solar panels into trees.
Why are you
think
telling
about
people
that.
Your ideas?
No. Just think about it then.
Yeah.
Because I want it to happen before I get
then
that
like,
old.
Using photosynthesis to like, or is it just a little?
No, I'm not saying connect them chemically. I'm saying so that you're not destroying all the land to put solar power to power the world. Because that would take a
but
lot
isn't
of land.
Isn't that why they put them in like Kansas?
Because yeah, but you're going to run out of room.
Desert and stuff.
There's only so much per panel. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to eventually.
Or you got to make it more efficient.
You're either going to get rid of nature or integrate it into nature is what I'm saying. Eventually.
You're right. Yeah. And it kind of defeats the purpose if you get rid
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
Because it's supposed to be cleaner and not ruin as much nature.
I mean, it's like technically for the next 4.5 billion years renewable.
Yeah.
Until the sun blacks out.
Goodbye. And then in which case it's just like goodbye Earth, so.
But the Saudis, they'll be ready. They're gonna build these sunproof
they'll build a new planet, probably.
They're gonna build these sunproof vessels that they can go and travel to another star and build a massive oil, but it'll be like a different chemical that they'll find and sell it to the aliens out there.
Right.
And the Saudis will live on forever and they'll leave everyone behind. They'll be like, screw it.
There's got to be a Saudi Elon Musk, right? Isn't that his whole plan? I never understood the going to Mars thing. It seems too close. It's in the same solar system.
Yeah, no, let's go somewhere else. Well,
we
there's
go somewhere else.
Most of them are gaseous. That's the thing.
You're right. Mars works in that it's the next most livable planet.
Exactly. That
it's
in our solar
livable,
system,
but it's the next most.
So it's much colder. You got to be or much warmer. So you got to be
it's
like
colder. It's colder.
Colder.
It's further away.
You're right. No, you're right. I'm thinking backwards. So it's much, much colder. So it's like, you got
to
count
like,
for that.
Ecosystems on it because the oxygen, is there even, it's too thin.
No, so there's a paradox. So it's called Fermi's paradox, which is the probability of finding life on another planet based on the available planets that can habit life. And it's very, very, very low. But the number of planets in the solar system surpasses that number. So scientists, that's the reason that they have it.
They think that there's at least another planet that could support life.
Correct. But then they try to calculate, like, even with different statistics of between those, what would have life. But you can't really do that.
Yeah. Plus, most of them that would exist would be so, so far away that, like, even if you could do interstellar and you could travel faster than the speed of light, like, it would still, like, some of these people, we're talking billions of light years away, right?
Teleportation's the future, Ben.
Yeah. But wouldn't that work through going faster than...
Well, you gotta fold space and time.
Yeah.
That's what wormholes are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just like, you gotta fold it so much, but then you gotta have, like...
You gotta have, like, passages, right?
A neutron star worth of energy to even do that. So it's just kind of like, impossible.
Right, yeah. We're stuck here.
Yeah.
Basically, is what we're saying.
And we could go into a black hole, but that would destroy the matter that we have.
So what's the point of that? It's just suicide.
Unless the Saudis make a vessel that can go through black holes, and then they can just conquer the universe. It would be great. They could be Thanos one day. Like, something maybe. Like that. Oh, man. Okay, let's do the closing for the movie. Yeah.
My last question is, why do students always fall in love with teacher? Which seems like, it's like...
Just like the Saudis, they are in authority, and you kind of respect that, you like that. And then there is, like, kind of a weird sexual aspect to it.
Yeah.
Of power.
Freudian.
Yeah.
Aspect, even.
For sure.
And it's like, you feel kind of gross because the guy is his ethics are totally off in this scenario. I feel like it's more talked about now than it probably was in 2004. But, like, the dynamic that, like, this girl's, she's attracted to him because of the power, but I think it's that she doesn't really know what's best for her, but he does. He knows that it's not best for her to get in a relationship with him, but yet he still takes advantage of her kind of vulnerability. I mean, you could say, yes, she should be able to know better and make her own decisions, but you should be the more knowledgeable and wise person and know that it's bad and turn away from that desire
if as she
the person in authority.
Had fallen in love with him once, then he erased the memory knowing it was bad, then he put himself in a position for it to happen again.
You're right. Because she still worked for him.
Correct.
That's what didn't make sense.
I would have fired her on the spot.
And how does his wife let that, like... I mean, I know she's not in control of his life, but, like, how...
Well, that's why she suspected it.
Right.
That's why she drove there. You didn't fire her.
It's just going to be a repeating cycle. Because maybe he thought that they messed it up somehow and didn't keep it secret enough or whatever, and he could do it again and still... So it's like, ugh. He's just...
It's like he can get away with it twice.
And no. And, of course, the whole ethics of... I don't know if we have a ton of time to go into this, but, like, the ethics of erasing somebody's...
With their permission, though?
I know it's consensual, so...
I still think it's wrong. Like, no matter what. I just think it's wrong. I just think don't mess with it.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes you try to make things better and it just makes things worse.
Yeah,
I think that's the lesson of the story.
I think the entire purpose of memory is that you have it so that you learn from it.
Right.
If you erase it, then you're going to make the same exact mistakes. That's what history is. Exactly what
they did in this movie.
Yeah.
Even though they did know.
So memory is the only thing that's better than history. History teaches you things that other people did. Memory teaches you what you've done. So it's like, you got to learn. And if you don't, then...
That's true.
You're going to do the same thing, just like all these people in this movie did. The girl did the same, the secretary did the same thing, and the main characters did the same thing. So,
right.
Joel and what's her face? I don't even memorize her name.
Clementine.
Yeah.
Darling.
I'm not going to remember that.
Oh, man. So, what are your final thoughts on the movie?
I'm not going to lie. It was pretty good. I did like it, Ben. I appreciate that you suggested this one. The girl annoyed me a little bit too much for comfort, but I mean, that's okay. But I think it was just a little bit cringy, and at this time in my life I wasn't really looking for something cringy to watch, you know, but it was still good.
What's your rating out of 10?
Since Jim Carrey did a great job, I'll give it a 7.
Okay, that's fair. This movie is, when I watched it the first time, it got to me, and I don't know whether... Yeah, I get what Zach's saying. It's cringy. I do think that maybe the plot line with the doctor and Mary, although I get what they were trying to do there, it was like maybe a little bit harder to watch the second time. I kind of forgot about it, to be honest. It was the more forgettable plot line in the movie. But the nature of how Michelle Gondry, you know, moves the cinematography to look sort of dreamlike but sort of real, and you see how relationships function. You're like, these are two people, you know, and they're both sort of have their issues and they're all messed up and they try to come together and they're selfish. I mean, people are selfish. And so I think relationships really do reveal to you and to the other person how both of you are selfish, and you see how the person is selfish. But then sometimes even in your seeing the other person selfish, you're being selfish. So it like compounds, and it's a compounding issue. And it could definitely spiral out of control if you don't communicate well and, you know, work on those things that you're flawed in. And it hurts because you say things when you're close to somebody, you know this, everyone knows this from being in a family. Like, we'll say the, you know, the most honest, blunt things to our family members because we're the closest to them. And it still hurt, and it hurts maybe even more because sometimes, because they're, like, because we care a lot about what they think about us because we love them and they love us. But it's sort of that, that vulnerability and even the bluntness and stuff that sometimes is actually what makes those relationships matter and close, and but sometimes also dysfunctional and messed up. So it's sort of the human conundrum, you know, explored in a movie.
Yeah, it's in. I think.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about this. The way that the images were depicted in this movie was actually really great, with the faces that were just blank, the dreams walking into different memories, right, just completely changing, her disappearing, everything disappearing, the house falling down and stuff like that. The waves. The
lights turning off.
Yeah, the waves coming up into the house, and then her in each scene, you know? And then the fact that he got to talk to her in the dream was cool. Right.
And so, it holds up, I think. Most of it holds up by today's standards. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, effects-wise. And
they purposefully made the faces look weird. Like, right, now we'd be like, that looked, I mean, it looked like Doctor Strange's third eye because it was kind of bad, right, bad CGI, but it was like, it was supposed to be that way.
Because they're, like, they're trying,
it's your to memory,
that, like,
it's blurry. It's supposed to be blurry. That's the thing.
He couldn't remember
that. So,
oh, I also wanted to bring up, so Charlie Kaufman wrote this movie, and he goes on to direct movies on his own. And have you seen I'm Thinking of Ending Things?
No.
Okay. Charlie Kaufman needs Michel Gondry. Because, you know, like, Charlie Kaufman is a smart writer. He explores very, like, surreal and abstract ideas. But the movie I'm Thinking of Ending Things, maybe we'll do it on the podcast, it is so depressing and kind of disturbing in how depressing it is. And it's, like, the light and the cheeriness and in the sort of some of the humor and stuff in this movie adds, even though there's still sort of some depressing nature about, you know, it's not very optimistic about relationships or anything, you know, it's not like a rom-com, like there's not there's sort of a happy ending, but you sort of know that it's going to end the same way that it did the first time probably. And so having Gondry contrast, you know, the more bleak Charlie Kaufman, I thought was a good decision. And it's not like I don't like Charlie Kaufman. I think, like, I'm Thinking of Ending Things was good. I've heard Schenectady, New York is a good movie, but it's just, you know, I'm not going to go to I'm Thinking of Ending Things that much because it's not bringing me, you know, those warm feelings that
maybe I should pick it just
so you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. Well, it's time. We hope you enjoyed our episode on the Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and the Middle Eastern economy. And
yeah, political. And if we're wrong, email us.
Yeah, please inform us. We would love to, you know, I feel like I just regurgitated a bunch of stuff I've watched on YouTube and heard on podcast episodes.
No, but the rich stuff is true. Like, all that's true. They have so much. It's crazy. Right. The line is going to be great. We're going to visit Movie Vault Trip to number 2.
The Line Film Festival. They're going to have it.
It's just a bunch of censored films.
Censored American films, yeah.
The free... It's supposed to be freedom.
Yeah. You don't get that here. Beep.
Rights? Beep. Anyway, that's not that funny.
Kind of is.
All right. Man, it's been fun.
Yep. Let's close the vault, Zach.
Sure, I'll do it again. What's this movie again?
Eternal Sunshine.
That's right. No, you do the song.
What song?
The song, Clementine.
Oh, wait, didn't she sing it? Oh, My Darling. Well, they also brought up Elliot Smith, but I was like, I don't know that I have any of those songs memorized. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling, Clementine.
All right, close.
That's good.